Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
And here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
This is going to be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening, hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everybody, to the Weekend Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. We got sports geeks all over North America ready to have a good time on this hour of the show here today. We'll be talking NCAA Final Four basketball with Steve Leventhal and Greg Eklund from Kansas City, KCUR-FM-NPR in Kansas City. And we'll also hear about North Carolina and Syracuse with Phil Myers from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago. And, free agency is the big thing in the NFL right now, so we're going to touch on that on the Weekend Sports Report. We do one of these a month during the NFL offseason, and this is our edition for the month of May. Excuse me, of April. So, for Green Bay, let's look at who they re-signed. They re-signed Nick Perry, linebacker, and James Starks. Perry is now re-signed from a first-round draft choice, and James Starks, who was rookie on the Super Bowl team and has contributed well over the years for Green Bay, he re-signs with the Packers also. They signed Jared Cook, a tight end who was playing most recently for the St. Louis Rams, and that might be a good signing. That's a position that they could shore up a little bit. And we've lost Casey Hayward, defensive back, and backup quarterback Scott Tolzien, although I think Green Bay is all right at backup quarterback right now without Tolzien. A couple other unsigned free agents for the Packers, name guys Don Barkley, the tackle, James Jones, and John Kuhns. Not all of those are unsigned free agents right now, so we'll see what happens there. And Mike Neal, he's a good player. He's got some interest from Seattle and Detroit right now. And so those are the guys that are unsigned. So that's where the Packers are in their free agency situation here as we progress during the NFL season. Now for, or lead up to the NFL season. Now for the Chicago Bears, Matt Forte is gone. And I think that's the big name here for the Chicago Bears. He's out of there and signs with the New York Jets. And then other than that, not a whole lot of excitement in the Bears free agency camp. So that's about it for free agency. We'll talk a little bit about that with Greg Eklund from Kansas City. And we'll also touch on, as I mentioned, the Final Four when we return here with Steve Leventhal and myself. You're listening to the Weekend Sports Report. Packer Dave coming at you for the next hour.
This is Bart Shore, and I want to invite you to visit InternetFM.com. This great site has online stations streaming rock music 24/7, hundreds of podcasts with on-demand music, sports, and talk programs. Also get daily features, music news, and useful links. Our radio stations have limited or no commercials at all. InternetFM.com. It's totally free. No sign-up required. If you love music, then InternetFM.com is for you. Also on Facebook at InternetFM.
Hey, Packer Davis, this is Nicky V, man. I'll tell you one thing. You're not all Rolls Royce. You're not a PT Beard. Hey, tell me you're Brick City, USA. You can't shoot the J, baby. You better stay with the pigskin.
Well, we'll stay with the pigskin a little bit here with Greg Eklund from KCUR-FM, NPR Radio in Kansas City. Greg, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
All right, doing fine. Steve, say hello to Greg Eklund.
Hello, Greg. As another guy waiting for football season to start, I presume.
Yeah. Absolutely.
How long have we been talking to Greg, or he's been working with us on sports audio and things like this? Got to be 15 years or so,
well,
huh?
All the audio.
30 years to count.
Yeah, all the audio started in 1998, 1999.
I remember him working with us at that time. So almost 20 years. How's your career done? Steve and I haven't done so well. What about you, Greg?
I'm holding my own. That's all what you try to do in this business.
All right. We're going to talk Final Four basketball with Greg in a little bit. But right now, let's touch on the Kansas City Chiefs. You heard us talk about Green Bay and Chicago and what they're doing in free agency. But let's touch on Kansas City. They made the playoffs last year, solid team. And from your viewpoint, what's going on in Kansas City with free agency?
Well, there is more talk in Kansas City about what the Chiefs have lost than what they've gained. At the beginning of the season, you might recall on a Monday night, the Chiefs looked terrible in a road game at Green Bay. And it was just a one-sided victory for Green Bay on that Monday night. It was interesting to note at that time, in the midst of a terrible start by the Chiefs, including a collapse at home against the Chicago Bears, the Chiefs didn't have one of their cornerbacks, Sean Smith, because he had an off-the-field situation during the off-season. So as a result of that DUI, he had to sit out a few games to start the 2015 season. That really cost the Chiefs because when he came back, between him and Marcus Peters, who was the rookie of the year in the AFC, on the other side at the other corner, the Chiefs really solidified not only the corner positions but the defense overall, and that's why they were able to finish the season so strongly. Well, Sean Smith has left the team as a free agent. So has Donald Stevenson, who is a serviceable offensive lineman. So has Jeff Allen, who was another lineman who always had trouble staying healthy, but when he was in there, he solidified the offensive line for the Chiefs. Then on top of that, the Chiefs heard from the league that there was some tampering apparently going on for Jeremy Macklin, and so the Chiefs are in the midst of trying to get back a couple of draft choices that the NFL has hammered them for. And on top of that, now we hear that Justin Houston, the big-time linebacker for the Chiefs, may end up missing this season because of a knee injury, occurred toward the end of last season. He clearly wasn't the same in the playoffs, and now we find out that he has ACL surgery and might be lost for the 2016 season. So it hasn't been a good offseason for Kansas City.
Okay, so you're thinking they've gone backwards then, and are you hoping for some good free agent signings, though?
Well, this team isn't really going to make a splash with huge free agent signings. I mean, they've got some guys who, again, are serviceable. But this is a team that's going to rely more upon the draft to help them, and that's why losing those two draft choices because of the Macklin situation really hurts this franchise.
Okay, I heard you use the word serviceable twice, and that kind of reminds me of Steve. You know, he's kind of barely serviceable on this show, but, you know, we don't pay a lot, so I think that has a lot to do with that right there. Okay, let's move into Final Four basketball. And, Steve, you wanted to talk with Greg about Oklahoma-Villanova.
Yeah, and also the fact that, I mean, Greg covers Kansas primarily. You were out in the Midwest Regional in Louisville. I wasn't the Midwest Regional. What was it, South Regional, I guess it was?
Louisville. Say it. Louisville.
In the Fried Chicken Coliseum or whatever it is.
Go ahead, Greg.
The Yum Center.
Yeah. Do they sell that KFC in the stadium? I mean, they must.
All right. Move on with this. Go ahead, Greg. Respond to what he said. You were covering that.
Yeah, Villanova knocked off Kansas. Villanova is the number two seed. Oklahoma was the number two seed in the West. They did play each other earlier this year in a neutral court situation when Oklahoma beat Villanova by 23 points in a game played in early December in Hawaii. So the thinking is that, okay, if Villanova lost to Oklahoma by 23 points then, what is it going to be this time around when they meet up again? And then Oklahoma goes out with the strength of Buddy Hield and pretty much dominates out in the West, while Villanova is solidifying its play with solid defense, keeping Kansas forward Perry Ellis in check. He averaged more than 20. Well, he, in the tournament, he scored 27 points in the game prior in the regional semi, and then he was held to a season-low 4 points against Villanova. So it may not be a 23-point game, and in fact, I'm thinking that Villanova has a shot at beating Oklahoma this time around, because from seeing Oklahoma previously, they're good, but if they get in foul trouble, I don't like the depth on the Sooners.
And also, Villanova has such a balanced scoring attack. They had four or five guys in double figures, which is certainly key when you're playing these tournament games, when you can get the balanced scoring.
Yep, and an unsung hero for Villanova is Daniel Ochefu, who had an injured ankle earlier this season, but seems to be at full strength now, and he is a senior and a force inside for the Wildcats.
But Buddy Hield just seems like he's almost unstoppable.
It seems like it, but West Virginia in the Big 12 tournament did an outstanding job of denying Buddy Hield the basketball. That's what Villanova did against Perry Ellis in Kansas, and the thinking is that they play that kind of defense against Buddy Hield and somewhat hold him in check, Villanova will have a better shot at beating Oklahoma this time around.
So what's your prediction for the game?
My prediction for the game is I'm going to pick Villanova. It's I'm going to say less than 10 points, but I'm going to say Villanova by 5.
All right, Greg Eklund from Kansas City. And information here on the Final Four coming up. Should be an exciting weekend. Greg, thanks a lot for coming on the show, and we'll definitely have you on during the football season again, that's for sure.
Sounds good. Look forward to it.
All right, Greg Eklund, KCUR-FM, NPR Radio in Kansas City. I'm Packer Dave along with Steve Leventhal. We will hear more on the Final Four, the UNC-Syracuse matchup, with Steve and SRN Broadcasting's Phil Meyer when we come back here on the show. Remember, check us out at internetfm.com. That's internetfm.com. It's the Weekend Sports Report. We'll be right back. Stick with us.
Hi, everybody. This is Pat Hughes, radio voice of the Chicago Cubs, and I would like to invite you to check out Baseball Voices, the Hall of Fame series. These commemorative audio tributes celebrate the greatest baseball announcers of all time. Harry Carey, Jack Buck, Bob Uecker, Harry Callis, Marty Brenneman, Red Barber, Milo Hamilton, and Dave Niehaus. These CDs are a collection of highlights, history, humorous stories, and Hall of Fame speeches. Available now at baseballvoices.com. That's baseballvoices.com.
Todd, what did you shoot today?
Oh, I don't keep score, Judge.
Oh, well, how do you measure yourself with other golfers?
By height.
All right, we're back on the Weekend Sports Report. Packer Dave here. And now Steve Leventhal talks with SRN Sports Director Phil Myers on Final Four basketball.
Welcome to the show, Phil Myers, SRN Assistant Sports Director. And he and I both took in the Chicago regional games in the NCAAs. And we saw a mix of good and bad basketball, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think any game that involves Syracuse, and thank you for having me, Steve. Any game that involves Syracuse was certainly an entertaining one. Unfortunately, that first matchup that Virginia had against Iowa State, not quite the level of basketball excitement. You know, early on, Virginia just hammered home Iowa State. When there's a big contrast in tempos, as those two teams have, Iowa State being up-tempo, and Virginia being very methodical but yet always efficient, as they've been the last 3 years of success. Virginia just went out and got them. Iowa State was kind of in quicksand, and they were chasing the whole game. and they couldn't get catch up to one of the best teams in the country this year.
And Syracuse began a little run of comebacks against Gonzaga on Friday night. And lo and behold, they did the same thing against Virginia on Sunday.
Yeah, interesting thing about Syracuse, I mean, there were many of those, including our friends over at ESPN and otherwise, and then CBS, that felt they didn't deserve to be in the tournament this year. And they garnered a 10 seed, regardless. You know, a team like Syracuse or other teams that, as we have seen throughout NCAA history, if they're able to get into the NCAA tournament, they usually cause some damage. And why is that? Well, you're not Syracuse without talent. And you never probably will see a team without talent at Syracuse. So once they got in, they became very dangerous. First round, they knock out a Dayton team. Then the next two games, they got the fortunate draw of some upsets happening that Midwest Regional, which it's always weird for a team in the Sweet 16 round to wear white as a 10 seed, but yet Syracuse did that. They had to come back twice against Gonzaga and then again against Virginia as an underdog. But, you know, you and I, Steve, we talked about before and during the game, I didn't really think that Syracuse was all that much an underdog against Virginia. You have two ACC teams. Granted, Syracuse hasn't been in the conference for too many years, but it's a conference grudge match. Syracuse always recruits well, and they're going to play the system that they've been playing since Jim Boeheim has been there, you know, during the Abraham Lincoln administration. They play a 2-3 aggressive zone. They're very athletic. They can shoot the ball if you leave their shooters open. And, you know, both teams in Gonzaga and Virginia gave them opportunities to claw their way back into the second half, and they certainly took advantage of it.
Which then again, now, of course, Syracuse gets to face another ACC foe, this time in the Final Four against North Carolina. And, you know, looking at their season, North Carolina won both matches. North Carolina won 84-73 in January at Syracuse, and then they won a little closer game, 75-70, on February 29th, which was senior night at UNC. But it's interesting, and on the Raleigh News and Observer, reporter talks about how the Tar Heels used two different strategies in each game. In one game, they went with a high-low offense, giving the ball to Bryce Johnson and then letting him feed it, which often went to Isaiah Hicks. Then in the second game, they said this is something that a lot of teams will do against Syracuse's zone, which was shooting from the outside, and they made a bunch of three-pointers. So that may be the strategy that they have to use, since North Carolina seems to have rediscovered the three-pointer as of late.
Well, I guess they're going to rediscover that three-pointer depending on the success of Marcus Paige from the perimeter. And that's unfortunately been the one Achilles heel that the Heels have had. No play on words there, right? During the season is the effectiveness of Paige and his consistency from the outside. He and Joel Berry are the two threats that they're going to have. The styles were definitely different, Steve, as far as the approach against Syracuse. Some of that might have been, you know, one time they're playing in a dome stadium and another time they're playing in a traditional arena. And a lot of teams have some problems shooting in a dome stadium because of depth perception and shooting backgrounds. That being said, the gameplay of the two matchups were kind of similar as far as Syracuse hanging in there against North Carolina and the Heels pulling away late. You know what, that being said, that hasn't been a trend that's been just exclusive to Syracuse when it comes to North Carolina basketball this year. Most of the time, they'll let teams hang around in games. And then in the last 10, 8 minutes or so, they start to pull away. We've seen that in all four of North Carolina's tournament games so far, Steve. They have not had a game that's been in single digits as a final score. And they comfortably pull away in about that last quarter of the basketball game. And, you know, I don't really see that changing anytime soon in their final, you know, if you're a Tar Heel supporter, in their final two matchups, if they're so fortunate to get that far.
Well, and the best thing that the Tar Heels have had in pretty much all season has been their ability to go down the bench. If they get players in foul trouble, they've got centers they can bring in, an extra guard they can bring in. Maybe the guard play is a little dubious, but certainly in the midcourt, they've got a lot of talent they can bring in off the bench.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's tons and tons of depth on that team. There's four really big players at the post that can be interchangeable. They're all very talented. Bryce Johnson and Hicks are more gifted offensively. You like to see Meeks, and we talk about this all the time, playing big and playing you know, like a physical NBA type of man that he can be, rather than sometimes shying away from contact when he can go hard at the basket. And then you also have Joel James, who gets some limited minutes for them as well. But there's nobody that can match them in a front court situation in the country. There's few NBA teams when it comes to size and strength that can match up with them as well. I think that you're going to see pretty consistent performances from those four bigs, no matter who they're playing or what the situation is. And a great thing is you did bring up, Steve, that high-low offense. When you flash Bryce Johnson to the top of the key, he's an outstanding passer. And as are, you know, Hicks and Meeks are pretty solid too. They're able to find cutters and to take advantage of that 2-3 active zone that Syracuse has. So I don't think it's going to be trouble from that standpoint for them. The problem is going to come down to, are the Heels going to hit their jump shots from the outside? And that comes down to number five, Marcus Paige. Will he be able to score? The only two that I do worry about, and I've told you about this again and again, is Theo Pinson and our friend Nate Britt, our transfer from Texas, where they sometimes make very poor decisions, and I don't know if their mind is in the game all the time. That's something that an active zone, and when I say active, that means like Syracuse doesn't just sit back. Yes, it's a zone, but they come out and they get you and they force you to make decisions. So we'll see if those two guys are effective in reading those types of plays. You know, then I think they'll be okay. And don't overlook Malachi Richardson at all for Syracuse. Very gifted scorer. He's their most talented player. He really turned it on in the second half for the Cues. And, you know, he's going to be the big key for them, for sure. Him and Cooney from the outside.
Well, who do you put on Richardson to defend him?
You know, they might just switch up on him. I don't really think it's going to be a big deal defensively. You might see Justin Jackson take him a little bit, I guess. Because one thing about the North Carolina backcourt is they're a little bit undersized, choosing to play Barry at the point guard and having Marcus Paige at the two. You know, Paige, you know, is by no means a small person, but you know, when you have a wing player, it might fall into the hands of Jackson just by process of elimination.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about him. We really haven't covered a lot on Justin Jackson, but, you know, he's kind of a key in the sense, too, because he can play inside, he can play outside. And when he, you know, if he has taken shots from the outside, when he's on and some of the other guys are on, it's just that North Carolina can be unstoppable. But here's an interesting thing that I read. Talked about a key play in the game, you know, in their game on Sunday, which was when, you know, Notre Dame had sort of clawed back and taken the lead, went on that little 12-0 run. Then there was a key play where there was a missed shot from the corner, and then Marcus Paige kind of went up and juggled the ball a little bit. Then he finally led it to Kennedy Meeks. And then I read an analysis and that had some interviews after the game in the locker room, and he said what Meeks said was, we're taught that we shouldn't throw big man to big man. So instead what he did was he looked for Theo Pinson, and then Theo Pinson saw Hicks running down the court. He kind of wanted to outlet it to Hicks, but Roy says, I guess their dogma is you don't pass big man to big man. So he outlet it to Pinson, and then Pinson saw Hicks streaking down the lane, so he sort of threw him an alley-oop, and it was a little off-center, but Hicks recovered it and sort of made that slam dunk, and then Carolina went on its own run, which is pretty much a key moment in the game on Sunday.
Yeah, that was the key. It was curtailing the run that Notre Dame had. You know, North Carolina came out of the gate in the second half playing very well, and all of a sudden a couple quick turnovers here and there, and Notre Dame went up one.
And the Bryce Johnson technical foul.
Absolutely, that didn't help the cause either. And by what you're saying, I'm interpreting, is this something, if it's an open court type of play, you don't want to go big to big.
Because, in the transition, yeah.
Right, exactly, because as you said earlier and correctly said, that they go high-low from big to big in half-court sets, post player to post player. But when you're in an open court situation, that's something that guards or wing players are more adept at handling the basketball at. So, yes, that's totally something they tend to go to. As you know, I'm never a fan when they go through Theo Pinson for anything but maybe Gatorade. But it turned out to be okay and successful on that play. Yeah, that's the thing. The Tar Heels have really answered the bell anytime they've been challenged. And, you know, down the stretch now when we're looking at their schedule, they've only lost one game out of, I believe, maybe the last 10 or 11 here.
I know they've won 8 in a row.
Yeah, 8 in a row. So, okay, so then it's 10 and 11. The only game that they've lost in that stretch was at Virginia by 5 points. And looking through their whole schedule, the Heels have not lost any game by more than 6. And, you know, they've gone between one to obviously those 6 points and losses. So, I mean, they're not going to get blown out, and they're going to keep themselves in their game. And I think Vince is really shining through. And another key that you see, whenever they've faced adversity, they've answered it in a very big way. You know, they lost at Duke, unfortunately for them, by one at home, a game they really should have won. Well, the next matchup, only days later against Miami, they come back with a resounding 25-point win against a then 11-ranked Hurricane team. And then their final loss, they follow up on senior day with a win against Syracuse. And obviously Syracuse is not a pushover in the end because they're facing them in the Final Four. So when it comes to resiliency, they've shown it time and time again this season. They haven't blown teams out a ton. I mean, outside of that Miami game and a couple others against lesser opponents.
Well, they also had the 35-point win in the ACC tournament against Notre Dame. That was what actually worried me, because whether or not there was any kind of revenge factor at play.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, how the momentum seemed to me, and we discussed this, you know, as the game was going on Sunday night, there was such confidence in how they dismantled the Irish. I think they felt that they were walking on water, and when something needed to happen, they would. Had that come against a Duke type of team or Virginia team or even a Miami team, I would have maybe had a little bit more worry, because the talent level as far as the depth of the rosters of those opponents would have been a little bit scarier. But Notre Dame, I think that they're very comfortable with playing that team. They played them twice a couple years ago, and they've been very familiar with Notre Dame, having to match up with them on constant occasions. So I don't really think that there was all that much of a fear factor going in.
So what has been one of the most surprising things to you or enjoyable things to you about this year's tournament?
Well, I mean, I've actually really enjoyed that in the end, for the most part, the big name schools have been there. I mean, of course, Kansas did lose in the round of eight. And we've seen other, you know, Oregon going out in the round of eight. But when a one is losing to a two, that's not really an upset. So I like that when we've gotten down to the end, we've had those power type of teams. Yet you also still had that opportunity to have that niche where there have been some upsets. And it's kind of cool that some of the upsets are from teams like Syracuse, who traditionally were power teams and are going to continue to be power teams, but that they've underachieved and they've still yet rescued their season. So you've had the glamour in that. And then you've always had, and you will continue to have, as we get more parity because of recruiting that's gone on and exposure around the country, you get that glamorous type of situation where these 15s are beating twos. And as long as it's not your school, you're always excited about it. And what that does is just creates madness in a bracket. I mean, you look at it, we discussed this. North Carolina on paper was going to be facing the toughest bracket in the country. But yet the bottom half of that Eastern Regional starts getting torn up. I won't call it a cakewalk, because every game is big in the tournament. But all of a sudden the path seems a lot, you know, cleaner to get to the land of Oz, you know. So they had a little bit of flavor everywhere. It's always good to see Kentucky. How on that first weekend they talk about teams, you know, again, ESPN saying North Carolina won't make it out of the first weekend. And then I read there's no clear favorite at the Final Four, but yet Las Vegas says North Carolina is an overwhelmingly favorite to win it. I don't know if somebody did somebody to somewhere at ESPN for the Tar Heels, but, you know, seeing Kentucky go out is always a something that'll put a smile on everybody's face. Because of the shenanigans, or at least alleged or perceived, of their coach and John Calipari. So we got a mixed bag and flavor of, I think, everything this year. And you know, and my final comment about that is, I really like, it's neat to have some upstart and underdog teams, but when push comes to shove in the Final Four and the Elite Eight rounds, when it gets to Elite Eight, you want at least six or seven of, like, you know, guns there. And the Final Four, I really like to see the best teams play. You're spending 4 to 5 months watching basketball being competed, then you really want to have those teams that deserve to be there in the end. I mean, that's just my opinion. You know, Les Grobstein would obviously disagree with us immensely. He'd want to see teams 348, 349, 350, and 351 competing in the Final Four.
So. Well, yeah, and he's, you know, well, we know that we've talked to him. He's sort of, he thinks there's so much underhandedness going on.
Whatever.
He's, yeah, but if we don't want to, We don't want to glamorize that in any case. So, all right. So the last thought is you know, we've talked about the season, talked about the tournament. We have the draft coming up, and you know, it's sort of become a league. The colleges have become a league of one and dones. Yeah. And again, a couple of those look like they're going to be tough draft picks this year.
Yeah. Well, the two are Brandon Ingram and
of Duke.
Yes. And I'm just trying to Blake
Simmons
right now, the LSU.
From LSU.
Yeah, Ben Simmons, the LSU player. By far and away, they're the two most talented players in the draft. Ingram has a much better perimeter game than does Simmons, an inside-outside game. There are a couple of things about Ingram. Body type has really become an issue to me, being 6'9", 6'10", and only weighing about 190 pounds. You know, that's going to say, what position is Ingram going to play at the NBA level? He has a very pretty jumper. He's got good court awareness, a good passer. He can play in transition. But is he going to play like guard a four? Is he going to guard a three? The way his body type is, I see him more as a small forward because I don't see him being able to bang. Very, very good player. Occasionally, I don't want to say gets lost or takes plays off when I'm watching him because it's hard to criticize a Duke player ever for their amount of effort or intensity. So I don't think that's the case. Another thing is Duke predominantly only plays seven players. So maybe Mike Krzyzewski tells him, say, listen, you know, when you need to take a rest in a certain play, go ahead and do that. As far as Simmons is concerned, he has a lot of similarities to the game that Magic Johnson had played for the Los Angeles Lakers. Fantastic, fantastic passer for a guy of his size. His court vision, his ability to not only run transition, but pass out of half-court sets. There haven't been many like him. Problem is, not only can we know if he's not a good shooter or not, he doesn't even attempt perimeter jump shots. This season, he was 1-for-3 from three-point range, and you know, I didn't see any of those three jump shots personally, so maybe they could have been desperation bailout three-point attempts. But you rarely will see him take an attempt outside of 15 feet in a face-up situation. When he's not in transition or he's not running a fast break, he likes to back a player down in the post. So it looks to me when he's being defended, it's going to be more likely, you know, a four. But the uniqueness about him is that he likes to take a guy on the perimeter and beat him off the dribble and get to the basket too. So he's so much quicker. So he's also a very unique player in the skills that he brings. I hope for his sake that he's able, if he doesn't have one already, when by all indications, if he never takes an outside jumper attempt, or at least very rarely, that you know he's going to have to develop an outside game. Or in the NBA, he will be figured out pretty quickly. But his uniqueness, though, is very, very intriguing to a lot of teams.
Well, I hope he likes Philly cheesesteak.
Well, I mean, yeah. They joke around about also how the Lakers, you know, wearing purple and gold, and him and Shaq will just be able to, you know, transition those colors very nicely. That being said, the Lakers have to have a top three pick in the NBA draft. Otherwise, yeah, he or Ingram may wind up playing at Philadelphia. So, you know, the Duke Blue Devils might just be heading on the next step, him joining Okafor in Philadelphia next year.
Great. Well, thanks so much for your insights and your information, and we look forward to having you on again.
My pleasure, Steve. Thanks, as always, for having me.
All right, Steve Leventhal and Phil Myers, and good job, Steve. A lot of good NCAA info. You ever play basketball, Steve? I don't know. Did you?
Oh, yeah. I actually did in eighth grade, but then I quit so I could take driver's ed, and that ostensibly ended my basketball career.
Okay, that's about what I figured. Okay, now let's move to golf with Rory Spears from Golfers on Golf and Steve.
Rory, thanks for joining us today. I know we're going to talk a little bit about golf and the Masters preview, but before that, when I saw you at the Chicago Midwest Regionals, you told me that you had picked Villanova to win it all, and I sort of laughed at the time, but I'm not laughing anymore. So first of all, congratulations on picking them. Certainly they made the Final Four. You know, why did you choose Villanova?
Well, actually, I've got them in the title game, but I don't have them winning at all, but I do have them making it all the way to the title game. And I think I've got I do have North Carolina to win the championship over Villanova in a hard fought game. But you know, having the opportunity to follow their team and just looking at the way that they play basketball this year, I thought they were poised to make a run. And I really thought that some of the teams that they could encounter along the way would be teams that would be tough games, but realistically teams that with the way they were playing, teams that they could beat. And I wasn't concerned about them, you know, even if they would have matched up against Oregon this weekend, which, you know, obviously is not happening now. It's Oklahoma. But I really thought they could beat Oregon. I felt they could beat Kansas. You know, I thought that they might end up with a third round matchup against, you know, Arizona, which didn't happen. But I like them beating you know, the Wildcats, beating the Wildcats. So, but you know, it's just an interesting type of basketball that they play, and it seems like it's a team that when they get tested finds a way to turn it up a notch. You know, you might think that they should be beating a team by a certain amount of points by halftime on a given night, and if the game is suddenly close, all of a sudden, you know, there's a team that can come out after halftime and go on like a quick 15-0 run, and before the other team knows what hit them, that 3 or 4 point deficit is almost 20. So I just like their style of basketball, and I felt they were poised to make a run. I wasn't sure that they had enough size to compete with North Carolina in the title game, but I felt they could get all the way to the championship. And, of course, that night, if they have a hot night or get a couple of breaks, they could win the whole thing.
Yeah, they certainly have been most impressive. And what they did to Kansas, that's nothing to sneeze about. Kansas was a top team, the number one seed overall, had also been rolling through the tournament, and then, boom, they ran into a stumbling block. So that's I give you absolute kudos for making that pick. All right, well, let's jump right into golf, because not this weekend, but next weekend, we've got the Masters coming up, the first of the majors. And just, you know, give me your thoughts in terms of, you know, who you've seen so far, who looks hot. If it's not Jason Day, I don't know who it is, and, you know, who you like for Augusta.
Well, right now, after the last couple of weeks, it's hard to pick against Jason Day. Jason Day plays good at Augusta. He hasn't broken through and won yet, but now that he has a major championship under his belt, he might be ready to do it again. Don't get me wrong. All of the usual suspects, I think, are going to be there in the top 10, but I'm not so sure that some of the obvious choices might be ready to win. One guy who I still think is going to be a strong factor there is Bubba Watson.
Really?
I really think that he's in line for his third jacket, and it could come down to him and Jason Day. Rory McIlroy will be lurking. I think Jordan Spieth will be lurking. Phil Mickelson could even be a top 10 guy here. But realistically, right now, I think it's shaping up between Jason Day and Bubba Watson for this year's Masters.
Now, it's interesting. Jordan Spieth had such a great year last year, but as I've seen, I mean, he hasn't exactly been lighting up the tour this year. He may have been contention, but he doesn't seem to have had any top finishes.
Well, you know, he did win, you know, and I know with the wraparound season now that they have, they always say that you know, in essence, 2016 started with some of those fall events in 2015. But realistically, I look at the start of the season as Kapalua out in Hawaii. And that's, you know, the Tournament of Champions. And Jordan Spieth went out there and he blitzed the field. And he won in what I call the first tournament of the year, because it is the first tournament of the year. And since then, he's stepped back a little bit. But some of the other guys, you got to give them credit. They've stepped up. Rory is little by little coming into form. He's not quite there yet for a full tournament. It's amazing how he can shoot 63 one day and 73 the next. Lately, though, I've seen a little bit in him that I don't like to see, and it's what we saw the last several years when he was playing is, Rory looks up at the back nine on Sunday. If he doesn't think he's going to win, he kind of phones it in a little bit, and Tiger was doing that for a while too. So I hope that's not going to be Rory's approach going forward. There's still a lot for him to play for. I think, of course, some guys are going to really try to amp up their games this year and earn those Ryder Cup points if you're eligible to play in that event. But I think Rory will make the European team regardless. But anyway, it seems like Bubba Watson's off to a really good start. Jason Day's off to a good start. Bubba's a proven winner at Augusta. It'll be hard to pick against him. But maybe Jason Day is ready to break through. And then, we mentioned Rory. This might be the one he wants too much. We'll have to see because he, obviously if he gets it, he's got the career Grand Slam, and that's a very small group of guys that have won, all four of the different majors out there. So I suspect he'll be there. Ricky Fowler is liable to be there as well. And so, and then you never know. Invariably somebody breaks through who's not on everybody's leaderboard. And then there's always the one veteran, somebody who knows the golf course very well. Jim Furyk's still coming back from surgery. As a matter of fact, I'm not even sure that he's going to be able to play. It looks like he could be a Players Championship, so I'm not sure he's in the field. But there's always there's like a Jim Furyk type guy, whether it's Ernie Els or Furyk or, for years, Steve Stricker or somebody like that who's a bit of a veteran that always kind of creeps their way onto the front page of the leaderboard on Sunday, but they just don't have enough to get over the hump. And Justin Rose has been he's one of those guys that's always lurking, but he hasn't played well enough of late this year to show that he's ready for a green jacket this year at Augusta.
All right, if you're just tuning in, listening to Weekend Sports Report, Steve Leventhal here. We're visiting with Rory Spears from golfersongolf.com. Now, let me throw another name out at you who said fallen off the pace, but he seems to be bringing it a little bit this year, Adam Scott.
Adam Scott is another guy that's slowly emerging. And you know what? I think until he gets comfortable with the new putter, this year. I mean, obviously he's settled in a bit or you don't win the tournaments that he's won already this year. But even in winning those events, it's been pointed out that he's had a real couple of disaster holes, And I believe, down at Doral, he had a triple bogey on Saturday and maybe a couple of doubles on Sunday. And I can guarantee you this, if he puts up a triple on Saturday at Augusta and he makes two doubles on Sunday, they won't be giving him another green jacket.
Now, what about another guy who, like you said, some of these veterans who always seems to bring his A game to Augusta, Sergio Garcia?
You know what? I'm not so sure that Sergio Garcia is ever going to win a major championship. Sergio finds a way to get in the way of himself and, he can play good. I wouldn't be surprised if he, most guys at Augusta, it's not supposed to be a big field this year. It might be one of their smaller fields. But Sergio, he'll make the cut like most of the field does, and he's, liable to finish under par. But, I'm not so sure that, he can... If one of those, the hot guys, the Days, the Spieths, the McIlroys, the Watsons, one of them get on a run and throw up, a couple of 65s or a 64, and, all of a sudden, those guys are up there at 17 or 16 or 18 under par, something like that. I just don't think Sergio's got enough firepower right now to stay with those type of numbers.
Do you think we could see scores that low at Augusta this year?
I don't know that anyone will go as low as Jordan Spieth did last year. But I got to believe that, you know, the Masters Committee will try to rethink some things about where they put those pins, where they put the tees, and how they angle them a little bit. But, and of course, you never know if you get some wet conditions there or cooler conditions where the guys have a little trouble like they did a few years back a couple of times, going for some of those par fives and two, then as a result, you know, you might only be looking at 12 or 13 under. But if the weather's good, and I suspect it will be based on how it's been down there of late, I wouldn't be surprised to see 15 or 16 as the magic number.
Hmm. All right. Can you give me maybe an unsung hero, somebody who could come out of nowhere, maybe not win it, but at least make a nice showing?
Well, there is, you know, I'm trying to think of some of the first-time winners that that have got into the field. I was disappointed to see that Tony Finau, who's been playing some great golf and just won his first event on the tour, Puerto Rico this past weekend, was not issued a Masters invitation for that victory because it was opposite a tour event. So he was a guy that could have broke through, played well there. But I'm going to give you the name of a guy who's a major champion who had kind of slipped off the radar a little bit. But he doesn't win at Augusta, but he always plays well. And if you saw the match play this past weekend, he looks like he's finally healthy, and his game is rounding back into shape a little bit. Louis Oosthuizen could also be, you know, that foreign player, Louis from South Africa, that all of a sudden pops up on the board, and you know, people say, "Who's this guy?" But people should know him if you follow golf at all. You remember him winning in 2010 at St. Andrews to win the Open Championship, but I think I wouldn't surprise me in the top five or seven there.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for being with us, Rory.
Steve Leventhal with Rory Spears. And we want to thank you for listening to this edition of the Weekend Sports Report. You golf at all, Steve? You golf a little bit?
Oh, yeah, but like everybody else, I'm not very good at it.
All right. Me and I don't do it.
You know, you can do a lot of things, but I could never play golf like those guys. They're amazing, the shots that they hit. That's why they get the big bucks.
I agree with George Carlin. They should give the golf courses to the homeless. That might not make me popular with a lot of golf people out there, but I just don't do it. I can't hit that little ball. And we want to thank you for listening to the show. We do this once a month during the NFL offseason, and then during the NFL season, we go into full gear each week. So for all the guests on the show, have a great week. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Get some bears, scumbag.
Goodbye.
Tell you what, dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless. I ought to club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now you ladies, carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.